Thank you again, Mr. Golden. I think in the last 2 weeks, we've been singing feast songs. And that one is one of our favorites. So we have a number that we'll be singing at the feast. I think in Coeur d'Alene, they have all the songs already picked out. And I don't know who picked them out, but probably feast songs for most of them, for all of them. Kind of. Do we have that many feast songs that are direct in the hymnal? I don't know. Before the fall holy days, we all know that we focus on prophecies of the end time, and specifically we focus in on the return of Jesus Christ. So with 2 weeks to go, we have this Sabbath and then next Sabbath, and then we have trumpets. So it's What do I give? Something on overcoming, or do we give something on prophecies of the kingdom of God, or both? Combine both of them, I suppose. But what we look at when it comes to the events that are going to take place in the future is the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation has 22 chapters, we know. 18 of those chapters actually are talking about events of the end time. And then you have four other chapters. One is a conclusion, also talking about the end time, of course. And then you have three chapters in the very beginning, one an introduction, and then you have two chapters after that that talk about something else. We'll get into that here in a little bit. In our update that we sent out, I talked about some of those end time events. There's actually a printout. I don't have it in this Bible, but if you want a summary of the end time, because it's easy to forget, now what was the fifth seal? What was the sixth? When is the heavenly signs? When do all these trumpets take place? What is each trumpet about? So it's good. I can't remember. I can remember most of it, but I would not get 100% having to go through with it on what each of the trumps, for example, is all about. So I have that in my other Bible, and I need to take it out and paste it in this one, just as a summary. But after I wrote some of those events in the update that I sent out last night, and you may not have read it yet, but I covered some of the incidences of what happens with the first seal all the way through to the return of Jesus Christ, just in summary form. It's not long. But I was listening to the European Union news. Usually I do that at the end of the day, a couple times a week. If I'm exercising, I exercise with the European news on. And mostly it's about the war in Ukraine still. But there was something that flashed on the news. It was a little clip that flashed on the news. And it was about what Germany is now doing. It was something that he came out with. This is Scholz, who is the chancellor. He came out with and spoke to the Budenweier, or however you pronounce that in German. But here it was, and I looked it up because I thought, oh, it's got to be in the news somewhere, and certainly it was. It's on www.euronews.com/myeurope, and then Germany must become, I won't read the rest of it, but you can find it. And here's what it said that Olaf came out with on Friday. Germany is ready to become a leader on European security. Nice word, security. And must become the best equipped armed force in Europe. Chancellor Olaf Scholz said on Friday. Now, background to that, all of us know, because Mr. Neff has given sermons on what's happening in Europe in the past, because this goes way back where we predicted about the European Union. So we've all, from time to time, given an overview of what's going to happen at the end time. And I have also, in whatever church we are, we just do that. But we all know that we have not wanted, that is, those veterans of World War II definitely would say we're in really deep trouble if we see Germany coming on and defending or having the security of all Europe in their pocket, where they are responsible for it. So we realize that the attitude has been, don't put Germany in charge. And we've covered that, so I don't want to spend any more time on it. But he went on to say, that is Olaf Scholz, as the most populous nation with the greatest economic power, meaning they didn't spend it on military. They, by the way, could not create a bomb, a nuclear bomb. They were not allowed to do that, but they were able to, as time went on, come up with defensive or conventional defense is what they call it. But they spent that extra money instead of on the conventional defense, they spent it on their economy, and they are the strongest or greatest economic power in Europe. In the center of the continent, he goes on to say, our army must become the cornerstone of conventional defense in Europe, the best equipped for us. That's pretty strong. And I think if he just said that in 1945, they would be tarred and feathered, whoever would do it, because you just would not get by with that. But enough time has passed. There's another generation, a generation, by the way, that doesn't believe in a monarchy. But, you know, like, well, why do we need a monarchy? It's just they're just rich and they're not doing anything. But anyway, we know why we do have the monarchy, the throne of David being sat on right now. But whatever the case, we have a generation that does not at all fear a Germany. We forget. And if we forget the past, we know the past repeats itself. That's one of those statements, been out there for a long time. Russia's war in Ukraine has been a turning point for German defense policy. And we saw it all. We've been following it enough to know what's been happening. And they were a little bit shy in actually sending military equipment over to Ukraine, but they ended up doing it. More money is being spent all the time, even by the United States. So when you have something like that happen, and it has been, we know it's a prophetic event in the context of what's happening overall from Daniel 2 all the way to what we read in the book of Revelation, because we do read about beast power. We do read about 10 nations. We read about the 10 nations getting rid of the woman, harlot. It says in the latter part of Revelation 17 that they kill the harlot so that they can join the beast. You have those 10 nations that in Daniel 2, that is, would be the 10 toes, right? So at the end of time, we have the stone that comes down, smashes the toes, the beast comes down, so or is taken out of the way. So we see the background of that in Revelation 17 and 13, basically. I'm not turning to it. But we almost, with all the news coming out, we almost think it's mundane, right? Because it's happening so much now, and whether it's the news talking about the Russian-Ukraine military operation, is that what they call it? And it's over and over, and you hear it from the pulpit, and all of a sudden, it's common, it's just commonplace. It's like, oh, so this is happening, but I still pay more prices at Costco. I still have my kids. I still have my mom and dad to take care of. We have the things that we need to take care of, but our mind doesn't necessarily hone in on, like a drone, I guess it would be, and really concentrate on what's happening. Tomorrow, I may not even think of what Scholz is doing. I may get involved in something, and it's out of my mind. So we see these things happening, and it's so commonplace that it's nothing special anymore. And I think all of us, being human, just have the same things going on because we have our daily activities. So we're going to head toward the book of Revelation. We realize that there is something in this verse that I'm going to. And it's basically instruction, accomplishment, and also a warning. So let's go to Revelation 19:7. Revelation 19 and verse 7. And here we see what is spoken of later on in the book of Revelation, not in the beginning. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. Revelation 19 and verse 7. Here it tells us, "Let us be glad and rejoice and give glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready." So we see, as we get to the end of the book of Revelation, almost, we see that there's a statement that the church, the bride, the wife, has made herself ready. Now, with that in mind, and I was reading some of these things, and of course, you're always trying to think of a sermon that is going to be not just a repeat of something else that we gave before, meaning I don't want to give something I gave 4 weeks ago, but something a little bit different. And when we take a look at the book of Revelation and the outline of the book of Revelation, you see something that is very important to God. And that has to do with the meaning or the understanding, the knowledge of end time events and what that means in our life and what it meant to God. So God puts this together. It's a revelation, but he does something in the very beginning that doesn't get into end time events. He does something else. So we see then, and I'll repeat, we have 22 chapters in the book of Revelation. We have 18 of them dealing with end time events. And there's actually three in the beginning that tell us that God is approaching this not just to tell us, hey, this is going to be happening, first seal, second seal, third seal. He does something else that is very important to him. So the question would be then, why does God warn and correct the church? Chapters 2 and 3. Why does God warn and correct the church before revealing the end time events? Why does he do that? Well, because 18 chapters on end time events do not prepare us as a bride of Christ. It doesn't. Knowledge is necessary for the church. Knowledge is necessary for character, right? But character is knowing the difference between right and wrong, choosing the right, and then doing the right. We remember that from, I think it's in one of the books by Mr. Armstrong, but it's been repeated over and over again. Knowledge is not character. So knowledge of end time events is not character. It's not going to do anything for us if we just have that knowledge. There is a statement in the Bible, and it's called things, T-H-I-N-G-S. And actually, that word is about 1,000 times in the Bible. The reason, by the way, I know that is because I looked it up this morning to find out. Because you see in the book of Revelation, when you start reading it in chapter 1, it talks about things. So we have 42 times in just the book of Revelation, the word things or the things. And I'll show you as we start out here in Revelation chapter 1. And starting out here, we have, and I'll just give you an outline. I think it was in a Plain Truth magazine. It must have been, I was still in Montana, and I was telling my Uncle Gerhard. Uncle Gerhard was the millionaire uncle from whom I would hear it so much, like nothing. I told you that story, I think. But anyway, he was taking the Plain Truth, and I was taking the Plain Truth. That was my grandmother, it'd be Gerhard's mother, that got him into the Plain Truth magazine. So, and I picked it up when I was young. I've told you that story. And there was a Plain Truth that was talking about chapter 1 and how the book was laid out. And I still remember talking to Gerhard about this. And the three things that are mentioned in chapter 1 that the book of Revelation covers. And we'll see that today. It's actually two things that are covered, but this is what is seen. So we start out then in Revelation 1 and verse 1, 2, and 3. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants things. Things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John, who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ to all things that he saw. Blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written in it, for the time is near. Now you might think, well, you know, no big deal. What do you mean things? Well, he goes on, and we can see then in verses 6 and 7 that God tells us we're going to be kings and priests, and then Jesus Christ is going to come. So the things that we have that are listed will help us to become kings and priests. So the book here, by the inspiration of God, lets us know the goal right away and the fact that Jesus Christ is going to return. And basically, we need to be ready for that. Verses 11 and 12, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, and what you see, okay? So what does that have to do with anything? What you see, write in the book and send it to the seven churches. Then the seven churches are named. Then I turned to see the voice that spoke with me, and having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands. And we read to the end of it here. It's like, I want you to see what I'm going to reveal to you, and I want you to write it down, what you saw. And basically, what we have here is, I'm going to see the churches. Okay, I'm going to see the churches. I want you to see what I'm telling the churches, hear what I'm telling the churches. Now, in the Bible that I have, I hadn't really looked at the outline, but a lot of Bibles, yours might be this type, where you have an outline of the whole book. And this one that I have is a book I would recommend, although I wish I were graduating from high school and get the book that Mr. Neff gives out. That's a really good one, too. Anyway, it's the Open Bible. This is New King James Open Bible. It's and it just has New King James as the translation, but it has a lot of information in it. And this one I like just because of the background information that we have. But it's interesting. Part one, the things which you've seen. I didn't realize that was in there, but you can see why they say it based on what we read. The things which you have seen. Now, that's a general statement because you haven't seen it yet, okay? So the things that you are going to see is chapter 2 and 3, and that is the things which are. The things which are, very important. Because the things which are is what covers the warning message to the churches before he reveals what's going to happen at the end time. Here's what you are like. And a couple of them are pretty good, as we know. They didn't have much to overcome. But there were five of them, definitely, that had some problems. And there was warning like, well, stick in there. Those of you who are doing things right, keep doing it. Don't stop. But it's going to be, look, I'm going to show you something. You will see something, and I want you to write it down. And that's where you have chapter 2. The things which are. And the things which are would be what the church is like. Before you ever get into, it wasn't, hey, I'm going to give you this revelation, and because you know what's going to happen, you will be able to take a test and put down on that test what's going to happen, and you are in the kingdom. There we go. That's good. But it's not like that. It's, you know, I've got to tell you something beforehand, because if you're going to be in the kingdom, if you're going to look at these end time events, you've got to know that the knowledge of these end time events are not the most important thing. And we know that anybody living and dying before the book of Revelation was written didn't know the end time events, knew a basic outline because Christ talked about them, right? So knew Matthew 24, they would have known that. The disciples would have heard him talk. So you have Matthew, Mark, and Luke, basically, that are synoptic gospels. So they knew some of these events. As we've always said, Matthew 24 gives basically the first four seals, right? So they would have known that, but now you have a lot more details that are covered. Those individuals in Thessalonica who died, and they didn't expect that there would be death in the church, and they were encouraged by the Apostle Paul. They died not ever reading what John wrote in the book of Revelation. So as important as it is, you have, again, here's a problem now. Here's what the churches are like. And then you go on to an area that I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. We can do that Feast of Trumpets next week, that type of thing. We can go ahead and go into some of these events. But part three then would be, you have the things which you've seen, okay? And then the one thing you see is, what are the churches like? And number two, the other thing you see is the things that will take place after this. And that's basic, good general outline. And then, of course, you can break the outline down into a lot more specifics. So what we have here is the things that are, and that would be the stars, that'd be the angel or the messenger of the church, and then you have the lampstand. Seven lampstands would be the churches. That's what we're told here at the end of chapter one. So we come to the things that are. Now, it's interesting that that's a statement. It's not like, I'm going to show you the things that were, okay, for you who are in Castle Rock going to church 2022 on September 17th, okay, at 2:30 in the afternoon, after taking a long walk to get into the room. So Mr. Neff was saying, well, I hope they don't do that with the seniors who are coming in at all. Of course, we're all seniors, right? So it's kind of, no, we're not all seniors, but I think the seniors are going to start yelling, the ones who come through the week, if they're still doing that, for sure. But it's not like, okay, I'm going to tell you the things that in these churches, which did exist in history, we know it was definitely seven churches that existed in Asia Minor. There's no doubt about that. But it's not, well, this was a problem that they had. Here is what is. These are the things that are. And so what's covered here is very important, and I'm not going to into tremendous detail on every problem that the church has had. Mr. Trabig, back in UCG, wrote extensively on that subject. I think it was in the church newspaper, wasn't it, where he had, I think, seven different newspapers that came out. Was it monthly, bi-monthly? I can't remember. But he covered all of these churches in quite a bit of detail. That'd be Mr. David Trabig, who does a lot of writing. But this is what exists in churches today. So it doesn't matter, any church of God where people have God's Spirit, they really do, they keep the Sabbath, they keep the holy days, the Spirit of God is in them, they've been baptized. Any church that exists could have one of these problems. Could have. So we take a look quickly at some of these, and we see with Ephesus, here is what is most important before understanding what's going to happen in the end time events. Now, it's important to God because he does reveal. He wants to share with us what he knows. He doesn't want us to be blind totally. He wants to give us encouragement to let us know that there will be martyrdom, there will be persecution, because if we were just hit with people dying from the world killing us because we are anti-this, or pro-this, pro-that, it could be discouraging. So God writes these things partially so we could be encouraged. With Smyrna, for example, you have the synagogue of Satan, there's tribulation, there's persecution, this is going to happen. So, you know, stay, hang in there, basically. Hang in there, You can have that also, for example, in the book of Romans, you know, all the trials that we go through are not worthy of the grand prize, so to speak, the kingdom of God, which we will inherit and live for forever into the future. But here you have now something that can keep us no matter the knowledge we have. Brethren, I've known people who have memorized whole chapters of a book. I remember one guy back in, I think we were, the choir was going to Arizona and we were singing during the holy days, and we stayed with one of the members, and he went through an entire chapter of Hebrews, just started and just rattled it off, and we're Ambassador College students, you know, sitting there in amazement, wow, this is really something. And you can see as the guy rattled it off that he kind of was happy with himself that he was able to do that. I heard that Khrushchev memorized an entire book of Matthew or something like that. But I think what I heard was false. I can't imagine. I think he was too busy pounding his shoe at the United Nations. Remember that? Some of you coming over there and giving us the 1-2 punch or whatever it was. So anyway, what you have with Ephesus, is a lot of good traits. And sometimes we can say, well, you know, I do this and I do that and I'm good at this. I have all of these good spiritual characteristics. But God says, you know, there's something that will be your Achilles heel, so to speak, spiritually, that you need to work on, because you may not be in the kingdom with this problem. So God doesn't give us a bye just because we're so good in so many things. And we all understand that. But the one thing that they did not have is they didn't have their first love. You can look at that a few different ways, I suppose. Lost the zeal. First love would be, what is the most important commandment? Well, the first four commandments, to love God, and that would be to have no other gods before the true God, to not take the name of God in vain, to not have idols, and to keep the Sabbath. So maybe they were a little slack on those first four, which are the most, you know, the first, at least, and second, like it, of course, we have the last six commandments. But the zeal or whatever it was, it seemed like they were zealous from what you see in verse 2 and 3. But we have to take a look at that now, and we have to say, am I really zealous? Do I love the Lord God with all my might, with all my strength, you know, with all my being? Do I, all my soul? So we can take a look at that and say, you know, first two chapters, God says, before the events of the last days do you any good at all, you got to make sure and have these covered. That's how I look at it. And it is so true, because you see it there in that order. What you see, let my people know all the way to the end time what the churches are like and what your problem could be. Is this your problem? Okay, message of Smyrna, faithful, not too much said here, don't fear, realize there's going to be tribulation, hold on in there, he who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. And brethren, the reason we know that these apply to the end time churches is because after every single correction, admonition, or encouragement to each church, God says, listen to what I say to the churches. Listen to what the Spirit says to the churches. And then he who overcomes the problem that is listed. So we have to say, there's a problem, and let me put it in red. I actually have it marked my new Bible, because you ruin a Bible every time you start marking it. So it's a pure Bible, totally. It'll get me into the kingdom if I don't put any notes in it, right? No, it's wrong. I will end up marking the new Bible also. But the fact is, we can take a mark on the side, a colored pencil, and put down, here's a problem, do I have it? Smyrna, here's a problem, or no problem, am I going to stick in there? Am I going to keep the faith? Pergamos, what am I going to do? Well, you've got Balaam brought up, and you've got Balak brought up. You've got idolatry basically brought up. You've got immorality brought up, not immortality, immorality. And so you take a look at that, and it says repent or else. So these are problems that we cannot, absolutely cannot have. And then Thyatira. You have again, in this case, I think Jezebel is brought up. And you have the same type of thing that in verse 20, it's a woman who calls herself a prophetess. I can think of a church that kept the Sabbath, keeps the Sabbath today, that still looks to their prophetess, who definitely had some problems. But you have sexual immorality, you have idolatry, and this is something that we repent of, and on top of that, let me put it that way, is involved in the depths of Satan in verse 24. The depths of Satan. That's going to keep us out of the kingdom is what God is saying. Sardis, basically, so many problems, they have a name where it is the church of God, of course. And what we see here is God is just going to take them out. There's a few names in Sardis, verse 4, that have not defiled their garments. And I want you to think about that too, defile their garments, because we're going to come back to that, the analogy that God is using. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name. But the others, I'll just take your lampstand away. You won't even be one of the churches you have for Sardis. Verse 3 would cover that. Then again, you have in Philadelphia, it's an encouragement to continue doing what you should be doing. And you see that you're going to have trouble. There will be those of the synagogue of Satan. There'll be always individuals. And here's one of the biggest things, brethren, that I can say about this. And that is, when God says, let no man take your crown, God is telling you that there will be people that will have such bad attitudes, such bad living standards, that you can say, if that's the church of God, I want no part of it. We've seen that happen. And it can be people that, family members who grew up and never were converted, but the example in the church was not very good to them, and they just don't want any part of the church. They say, it can't be the church of God. In fact, we know from the book of Jude that there will be people who are spots in your feast of charity. That doesn't mean it's not the church of God. In the church of God, there will be spots. In the church of God, there are spots. There just are. People that you would say, either they are not in the church, they don't have God's spirit, or they just have a lot of overcoming to do. Could be that. Because we cannot judge who has the Spirit of God and who doesn't, because that's not our business, and we can't get into the mind of people. We can say, since they're a Christian, they should not be acting that way. We could say that, definitely. We probably are not going to tell them to their face unless it's our business to do so, and sometimes it is. So you have that. Then you have the message to Laodicea. And basically, you have a church that thinks they're all right, especially when you come to, let's see here, verse 17. It says they're lukewarm and neither hot nor cold. Now, I'll just stop here for a moment, because when I was at Ambassador College, I remember hearing that it's good to be cold because cold water is good therapy. Drinking cold water is good. Being in cold water, cryotherapy, I think it's called. Cryotherapy, you get into this chamber Your head is up to here in almost not minus 200 degrees. Have you ever been in that chamber? Minus our daughter-in-law was the manager of a couple, and so we've been in it three or four or five times. If you like to live in Montana, naked in minus 40 degrees, or jumping in cold water, I guess ice water would be like that. But cryotherapy, it's 3 minutes, and the temperature in it, I think it was minus 190 is what it was. And that sounds like, no, nobody could live in there. But you can, for if your hands are covered, you have socks on, shorts on, and then your hands are covered. And you are standing there, and it's 3 minutes, and that's it, and they bring you out. And what happens is all the blood goes to the organs of the body and then picks up, because it's the organs you want to keep. You know, if you have someone who really cold, you don't want to rub their arms and whatever, because you don't want the blood going back out to the limbs too fast. You want it in the organs, from what I heard. And that's the basics of it. You do want them to get warm, and there's a way of doing that. But cold, bottom line here, is good. Cold is good. And also, hot is good. How many of you like hot coffee? So when you go and you see that they have other types of coffee, where do you ever see warm coffee? I've never seen warm coffee. It's either cold, iced coffee or hot coffee. Now, some people who, and this may hit some of you, so don't be offended, some of you may just not be sane enough to know that warm coffee is no good for you. I'm kidding about that. Some people might like warm coffee, so my wife is going into a shell here. So yes, warm coffee, but when we're talking just about something spiritual here, not cold, which can be good for you, you don't spit out cold iced coffee that has a lot of chocolate powder in it, especially, you're not going to spit that out. You're going to drink that hot coffee. You're going to drink the whole cold coffee that you buy. And that's the point that I learned on this. Now, some people said, well, no, cold would be not good. And I can see why people might think, well, the cold part of it is talking about a cold Christian. So I can see that. But the point of all of it is, God is going to spit out warm, lukewarm Christians. God spits out a lukewarm. I will vomit you out of my mouth, verse 16. I'll vomit you out of my mouth. And then it says, because you are not cold or hot, you are in trouble. But verse 17, you say you're rich. You have become wealthy. You have need of nothing and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Now, I really think that overall in an era, if we can talk about eras, I think overall just people in the world are Laodicean. They're just, they know it all. I'm rich. I'm increased in goods. I know everything. You don't have to teach me anything. I have need of nothing. When I was in Kansas City, I had a fellow call. It was an anonymous call. And he wanted to know what we believed. He was reading about, you know, in the Bible, and he was trying to find a church of God. He knew about the Sabbath, but he wanted to know what we believed because he was looking for a church that believed exactly the way he believed. So, and it's like, I think you're not going to be happy with us because we really are here so you can be taught too. So, and it's like, well, no, I don't need to be taught anything. I know it all. So we see at the end time, you see a generation, and I don't know if we can agree totally with all of these generation types of X and Y and Z or whatever they are. But I know our niece, that would be Marion's niece, works in HR in California for a fairly big company. And she showed us something when we were out there, and it's this woman in the car, and she's been hired, and she gets a phone call from her boss because she's not at work. She just got hired the previous day, and she didn't show up. Like, well, what happened? Where are you? Well, why would you expect me to come in for work this morning on time? We were out partying because I got this wonderful job from you guys. So we're partying, and, you know, I just slept in, and it's a very nice job, and I'm looking forward to working with you. But, you know, the employer is like, you have to be in at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock? Well, that's not going to work for me because I don't get to bed till 3 normally. And then I have to go to Starbucks and get a coffee. And usually it's 10:30, you know, by that time. And then I have to take a little time off because I didn't sleep well. So I could come in like 1 o'clock for a couple hours every day. And this is actually, Bob Zimbrick this morning heard me talk about HR and what Chrissy said or showed us. And so he showed me something else where the lady is being interviewed. It could be a man, by the way. It could be a man. Sorry, you ladies. I just like to pick on women better more than men. Not really, but it's either way because the generation is supposedly like this, okay? And she's interviewing, and it's like, well, do you have good tech skills? Well, I just go to, you know, is it Sierra? Is that it or something like that? And if I don't know something, and most of the stuff I don't know, I just ask Sierra. You ask Sierra. Yeah, she supplies it all. Well, are you sure? Yeah, it's good. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. You and Sarah come to the office, and you have to be here at 8 tomorrow morning. Did you say 8? Yeah, 8. A.M.? Yeah, like p.m. And you're just laughing away because this woman is like, oh, that won't work for me. No, that will not work for me. And he says, well, yeah, you have to be in at 8. Well, you know, you told me I had a good recipe, but you've given me no encouragement from the time I sat down here at all. You've discouraged me. I'm losing confidence right now. I'm going to HR. And he says, you're not hired. You mean you're firing me right now? And the guy said, well, I guess you could say that. It just goes on, you know. It's like, is there a generation which they're going to do what they want to do when they want to do it? And they're not going to be there, show up. By the way, some of you are supposed to be in that generation, but I don't know if really that's across the board. I have read articles where it says, no, it's not totally that way, and they're kind of exaggerating this generation thing. But it's good stories when you hear that. But overall, you know, to be successful, you probably should show up for work. And maybe a half hour early on some jobs would be good to prepare for the job. But what we're looking at then is, do I have this problem? Bottom line, do I have this problem where I know everything, I cannot be taught? And that's more of what maybe our age is, especially spiritually, because we don't have people that even necessarily go to church every week, even though they claim to be Christian. I read an article yesterday where it says we have 64% of Americans who claim to be a Christian. And by the year 2045, it's going to be down about 40%. We're not going to be a Christian nation anymore. So we look at these things, brethren, and I'm trying, and I think I have gotten the point across, that we are definitely to read chapter 2 and chapter 3, which shows what the churches are. The churches are, here are problems to overcome. Then what we have in the way of what it will be like in the next 18 chapters, that is going to do us some good. So we have then things that you're going to see, and here's what you're going to see. And this is the way the churches are. So let's go from here then to Revelation 16 and verse 15. Revelation 16 and verse 15. We read earlier on that the wife has prepared herself. The wife has prepared herself. Revelation 16 and verse 15. Behold, I'm coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments. Sardis, remember, had a problem with their garments. Lest he walk naked and they see his shame. Later on, in toward the end of the book, we see that in chapter 19, we already covered that, the wife has made herself ready. We see then a description of the bride of Christ. I show you the bride of Christ, and you see this temple coming down out of heaven, which is using the stones and the street of gold, you know, the gates and all, with this temple that comes down. And I think if you will notice in the book of Corinthians, after you see that God is building a temple, that from that time on, he doesn't dwell on a physical temple anymore. The temple is the church of God, the bride of Christ. And that's after about 1 Corinthians 5, I believe, is what you're going to see on that. Not that there won't be a temple. The church does teach that at the beginning of the millennium there will be a temple, but eventually there's not going to be a physical temple necessarily, unless I'm misreading this gigantic temple that comes down that is so many miles high. Our minds are really finite, brethren, and there's some things we just can't comprehend when it comes to this temple that is going to reach, you know, where Sputnik first went. I may have lost some of you. Sputnik was the first satellite that was put up there, and that was in 1820, so some of you probably weren't alive and may not remember that. But again, our minds are finite, and I just can't comprehend something like that. But again, this is going to be a spiritual world, so we can't say, oh no, that absolutely won't exist. We can't say that, but certainly symbolically, there's a lot of symbol in there talking about the church of God, if nothing else. But what we see then is keep your garments, lest you are naked. If we're planning a wedding and the bride has her wedding gown and the groom has a nice tuxedo and all, if you have, let's take the bride with a white wedding gown, which is kind of typical, and a cup of coffee is spilled on that garment, would you say, yeah, doesn't matter, I'm just going to walk down the aisle anyway? And the answer is, it wouldn't happen, would it? You get a big, unless someone takes a power washer and, you know, hits you with it and gets it all off, which I don't think you'd appreciate either. But what I'm saying is, we have to have a garment that is not spotted. And this is what God is looking at. He's looking at a bride who has, and it's a wedding dress, and we do have also a parable where you have the wedding supper, and they finally come, and it's like, you don't have your wedding garment on. And guess what happens? If we don't have our wedding garment on, we can't be in the wedding. And what is so important is that we have God's Spirit that convicts us of these things. We hear so many sermons, and I have sermon notes galore from college, and I don't go to them because, you know, something on paper is good to remember for a while, good to look. In fact, we have a Bible that we're supposed to go back to a lot, and so we have repetition. But, you know, little notes that we tuck away someplace and all of a sudden they're lost, they're not going to do us any good. When we do something Doing is what really locks in what we're supposed to be doing, doing it. And the more we do it, we don't have to go back to a piece of paper, you know, well, here's my routine, and we have the routine, we mark it down. After a while, the more we perform that routine, we don't need the note. It is here, and it's just automatic. Not that notes are not good. Again, we have a whole Bible of notes, I guess we could say, words that remind us of what we're supposed to be doing. I actually use the Bible for this sermon, by the way. So you know what I mean by that. But it's God's Spirit. It's a spiritual item. It's a spirit power, absolutely, that causes us to do these things. And that's why in Matthew 25, this will be the last scripture that I go to in the sermon. Matthew 25. And this is the parable of the 10 virgins, where it likens the kingdom to some who had oil and some who didn't. The biggest help in all of this, or the biggest instruction we can receive, is we have to have oil. It's a power source for the lamp. And it is interesting that we have a lampstand in the church, but the oil is what must be replenished all the time. If we don't have oil, we just are not going to have the fire burning in us, basically, to do the job that we need to do. We have to have oil. And we also know that oil is used when there's a coronation. Oil is a symbol of the Spirit of God. And we have to have the Spirit of God. Bottom line, conviction by the Spirit of God. So we know if we're doing something that Revelation chapter 2, chapter 3 says not to do, we're convicted. If we don't have the oil, it's going to be hard to be convicted. Definitely, even if we are convicted, it's going to be hard to do what we know to do. Remember, character is knowing, choosing, but if we don't have the Spirit to do it, we're not going to do it. We can know what's right, but we end up failing. And we can fail so many times, you know, just living itself is failure, but we learn how not to fail in physical things. Spiritual things, we learn, I better be prepared at all times because there are going to be trials that come along. Was it Mr. Maker who said that Christianity and Christians were basically baptized to have trials? Maybe that was it. We're going to have trials. If I plan out a whole day perfectly, I am going to have trials because I can't control other people, other things at all. I cannot control. I can control my wife. Of course I can control my wife. No, we can't control other people at all. We have self-control. We can't control what's going to happen to our car. Nathan Geller just lost a CV joint. And he said, that's kind of hard to put in. That'll take some time. That was a little bit of a trial. So you all know, don't you, that God takes us and puts us in a discomforting zone, I guess we can say. I love to be in a comfort zone. I love for every part of my body to feel good. I love to have euphoria in my mind. I love my wife to make an apple pie every night. Hint, hint. No, I don't. I really don't. But we love things to go right. And God says they're going too right. We're gonna bring something along. Who wants to go down there with Greg Sargent and cause something to go wrong? And 2 million angels, oh yeah, I'd like to do that. But that happens. It really does. So we have to have the Spirit to choose right from wrong, choose the right from wrong, and then have the power to do it. But we have to, brethren, have the oil. We have to. If things are going wrong during a day's time and we find ourselves really aggravated, then you know, we pray, Father, really help me. to, and then dot, dot, dot. That's why God says be instant in prayer. So anyway, when we look at the end time events, we want to take a check and see why God says, here's what I want, John, you to see, and here's what I want you to write. I want you to write that this is the state of the churches, the good, the bad, the ugly, so to speak, and I want the churches to work on the bad and the ugly. Work on it. I'm telling you in advance, if you want to be in the kingdom, if you want to fulfill what I'm going to write to you happening and ending up with the return of Christ and being a spirit being, I want you to know what can keep you from being in the kingdom. And that's why we have Revelation, not just chapter 4 through chapter 22, but that's why we have Revelation chapter 1, 2, and also chapter 3.